Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Angela Alioto, candidate for mayor, former president of the Board of Supervisors.
And can you give me a one-minute version of why you should be mayor of San Francisco?
I am running for mayor of San Francisco because of the state of the city, from the disgraceful amount of poor people living on our streets, to the filthiness of our streets, to seriously addicted people literally dying in our streets when they should be in rehab and not be allowed to just sit there while we walk by. It's not a third world, and it's being treated that way. Nobody can afford to live here. Affordable prices are starting at $130,000 salary. That's not affordable. We need to keep our teachers, our police, and our fire, and our emergency services, and nurses here in town, and they just can't afford to live here. I don't think I've ever seen San Francisco in a worse shape. And so I decided to run for mayor when I really hadn't intended to.
Let me go ahead and turn this just lower, because I do hear it popping a little. So just don't face the mic, just face me. And then that should be fine. This is going to be edited, like I said, which allows me to do another check to make sure that the volume and everything's okay. What did you have for breakfast?
Actually, it just came from Chinatown, where we had Hong Kong tea. First time in my life. It was really good, with all sorts of pastries.
All right, good. How would you describe the neighborhood where you live?
I live in an incredibly gorgeous neighborhood. Every block has a view of the bay, of Alcatraz.
What neighborhood is it?
Pacific Heights. I've been there 45 years. I bought the house when I was a kid. And I had three kids at the time. I had four kids by the time I was 24, so I was very young, and I've been there a long time, and it's clean. It's not safe anymore. It's not safe at all. I don't go out, like, at night to go down to get something from my car anymore. The cars get broken into all the time, all the time. It's certainly not what it used to be, but it's obviously one of the most beautiful places in the world.
So we're going to get into a lot of the different issues that the mayor of San Francisco is going to need to take on head on. We're basing these along the lines of the beats that we follow here in KLW News, our news department. And we're going to begin with environment and energy. And actually something that has to do with kind of the micro environment of San Francisco. What is your plan to deal with San Francisco's litter problem?
I have taken a pretty hard stance on this. First of all, let me just say, I was part of the climate change discussions at the Vatican for 2 weeks, and then everybody went on to Paris. Seeing things that we're doing to Mother Earth is absolutely startling. I think it's probably one of the most outrageous things we could be doing. And it starts with the little acts. It starts with littering. It starts with people dumping their trash in the streets. If you go to North Beach now, one of the cleanest and most beautiful districts of our city forever, until the last 5, 6, 7 years, people are dumping their garbage in the streets. I believe they should be fined. I have been criticized for this, but having said that, I remember very well as a kid in my 20s and 30s that you would get fined if you threw something out the window. I don't know why that seems to be so punitive now, but people are telling me my stance is punitive. I think that's nonsense. You don't get to just dirty up our city and get away with it.
It seems like police are often putting their attention on something else that are not minor misdemeanors like litter, as egregious as it can be for a city.
No, I understand that. But having said that, just because a lot of crimes went from felonies to misdemeanors and misdemeanors to infractions doesn't mean that you get to dirty our city. You know, I think that if you get stopped once, you might not do it the second time.
Mm-hmm. What would a fine be like to you, do you think? What kind of fine would you want to levy?
I don't know, $25, $50, I don't know, something that makes you not do it again.
Uh-huh. Would you do anything to...
By the way, there are laws that address this.
But they don't seem to be followed that much because the city ends up having a lot of litter.
Yeah, we don't have any police officers. We have... I'm for full staffing of the police department. We have 1,600 police officers. 300 of them are going into retirement in June. That leaves us with 1,300, leaves us almost 1,000 officers short. There is a cadet class that's happening. But having said that, they just don't have time. They didn't even have time for the break-ins, the car break-ins, even though now there's been a 17% decrease in that because we've paid attention to it. But it's, we don't have enough officers, whether they're on the street, on a bike, on a motorcycle or on a horse. We need more police officers on the street.
Well, we'll turn to law enforcement in a minute, but back to climate change, and you said that you were at the Vatican.
Right.
What would you do to prepare San Francisco for the effects of climate change, like sea level rise on the waterfront?
I think it's really, really important to have educators and experts in the specific areas. I am a big believer in calling in experts and having seminars and lectures and publicizing them with being the tech center of the world now. We should be able to educate people as to what the effects of damaging Mother Earth are. And so that's certainly, that's what one of the first steps I would take. But, 20 years ago, I was on the retirement board, and we divested of everything that we thought was a toxic problem. I was on the Outer Continental Shelf. I banned oil drilling. We're talking in the mid-90s, and we're still dealing with the same issues all the time. So I was at the time divesting, having the city's pension plan divest from all of those, which hurts the endeavors, which is the concept. We divest from Chevron Oil when they were participating in apartheid. So those types of boycotts from this city and county of San Francisco are very effective. But it's those types of things, and specifically education by the experts in the field that speak a common language, as opposed, you can't get too scientific. We want to understand exactly what to do and what not to do. What is the footprint? What isn't the footprint?
A lot of the development in San Francisco seems to be in areas that could be susceptible to problems from sea level rise.
And toxins. Yes,
well,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are building the new seawall, which is something I support 100%. But having said that, as I understand it from recent reports, there's a big danger. Well, we know that in the marina. I mean, in 89, forget 06, in 89, the liquefaction in the gardens was stunning. The tilting of the house is off. They left their foundation because they floated off. And when you realize it was that much water to float a house, it's no joke. And the whole marina is landfill anyway. For my law firm, which is on the corner of Washington Street and Montgomery, so from that corner, which is where the pyramid is, from that corner, all the way back to the water, where the Hyatt Regency is 350 feet of landfill. So we know where the landfill is, and I just can't imagine there not being problems in the future, whether it's earthquake or whether it's sinking. The Millennium sinking. No kidding.
Would you want to discourage development then around those areas like Soma and maybe Mission Bay?
No, I think that, first of all, I was the legislator for Mission Bay, and I think a lot more thought went into Mission Bay than went into, say, the building of the Millennium. I don't think anybody should build anything on the properties that are serious landfill until everybody can be assured that there's not going to be a Millennium problem. I think that was terribly negligent.
As leader of the city, would you then ramp up the amount of oversight that the city does to make sure these things don't happen?
Again, I am a real fanatic about bringing in experts. When I hear some of these people in these hearings describing the work they did, whether it's engineering or whatever the issue is, we don't have the experts we need.
Because it seems like often like somebody will bring in their experts and they'll say this is going to be fine. That's why.
No. Hold on. I'm not talking about biased experts.
How do you tell?
Well, if the developer is bringing in the expert, I'm going to question it. I'm a civil rights trial lawyer. I'm always going to question what the defense says.
Mm-hmm.
No. I mean, legitimate,
On the flip side of sea level rise, there is drought in California. Is there anything that you would look to do to protect San Francisco from future droughts?
Well, we went through this when I was president of the Board of Supervisors. We did everything from saving water in our toilets that Carol Migdon did way back when, to every water saving legislation or activity that you can think of, we really did in the mid-90s. It was very discouraging to hear a gubernatorial candidate the other night say that during all of the rain of last year, of last winter, that we didn't save any of that water. So I went about the business of investigating that, and she was not correct. We did save water, thank the Lord. But obviously, when it rains, we need to save much, much more water and make sure that we're doing it properly and try our hardest not to use the groundwater that's depleting the earth such that we're going to end up with, you know, the Teutonic plates banging into each other.
Would you encourage San Franciscans then to reduce their use of water?
Well, I don't think anybody should ever waste water. We went through the drought again, and I think that those habits stay with you. I know they stay with me, and I'm assuming they stay with my family, but when you've lived through it, you don't waste water. You don't go outside and wash your car and put the hose down and let it run down the street. That kind of stuff doesn't happen anymore. That's what we used to do, though.
It happens elsewhere, for sure.
Out of San Francisco, you mean?
And I would say in San Francisco, there's probably a lot of people who are not as aware or attentive to it.
Well, that's because we have so many newcomers. You know, that's a whole other issue. There's some overwhelming statistic about how many people have come here in the last 5 years. But I think once you've lived through a drought, which newcomers should have. You know, I don't remember programs being implemented that were as severe as what we did in 97, 96. I don't remember. We went all out. Now, 2-3 years ago when we had like no rain for 6 years, 5 years, I don't remember us being told to do the preservation that we were doing in the 90s. So I think a lot of what I do is, you know, left over from the late 90s. I know there was some education. I know your PG&E bill and your water bill. They all tell you how to preserve both water and energy. Mm-hmm. I get that. But I don't remember the direct, you know, if you do this, you'll be penalized some way. I don't remember that. We did that in the 90s.
Well, building on energy then, are there any kind of renewable energy infrastructures that you think San Francisco should invest in?
Oh, I think we should invest in all of them that the experts tell us to invest in. Once again, I can't be specific on that. I'm not an expert in that. And I am the first person to say where I need help in something, I would absolutely get the experts. But if the experts tell us we need to have everything, you know, solar, I'm very environmental connected from learning what I've learned just in the last, 5 or 10 years. I did a lot of environmental legislation when I was president of the board, a lot of it that was way before its time. But then we called in the experts. What does this oil tank in front of the house do? Because all old San Francisco homes had big oil tanks right in front of the house for the light fixtures that were all, like the home I live in, if you turn the light fixture, gas comes out. And so I wouldn't have known that without the experts that every house has that in front of it. And so we had them removed. But there are many, many things to do that would make it more environmentally friendly.
Well, it seems to me like there are obviously some aspects of leading the city that you would prioritize, and then some things that you would refer to experts
Absolutely.
For. But how would you determine which experts and when to talk with them about what?
I'm an expert in homelessness. I'm an expert in mental health. I'm an expert in the things that have me in this race. And that is the disgrace of so many people living in poverty on our streets, the disgrace of people shooting up on our streets and basically killing themselves.
So before we get to that, would you then prioritize talking with experts then about different environmental issues?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
This would be a priority of your administration.
Of course. You know, especially we did a very large campaign supporting Pope Francis's encyclical. I did it all on the West Coast in 2015 and 16, all over the East Coast,
mm-hmm.
Supporting his encyclical, Laudate Si.
I don't
which
know what
is,
that is.
Oh, the encyclical's incredible. In fact, it was praised at the summit in Paris, and he's been one of the loudest proponents of saving Mother Earth. And matter of fact, there's a film coming out this week in movie theaters on the Pope and his stance on the environment. But Jerry Brown was there with us and Mayor Ed Lee was there with us. It was an incredible, I I learned more from those scientists in that seminar at the Vatican than I'd learned in many, many years in one seminar type thing. But we were there for days. But having said that, the environment's a priority. I mean, if, you know, you ruin your environment, you ruin, you can't live, you can't breathe. I was just, where was it? San Jose the other day. And I was just shocked at the, I was shocked at the pollution, the air. I don't know if it's the airport or what it is, but we were in a building downtown in San Jose and you can see out the window. I haven't seen that kind of smog in, I don't know, 15 years. So that, I mean, it has to stop the minute you see it. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're waiting for because it's really harmful. And I'm asthmatic, so you can't miss it. You don't even have to see it for me to know it's there. But no, we have to be on top of the game when it comes to our environment.
We're speaking with Angela Eliotto. She's a candidate for mayor of San Francisco. So you mentioned toxins in some building sites and Hunters Point Shipyard,
right.
Of course. There's a lot of controversy about what's happening there with soil samples taken on some parcels there that were found to be falsified. This is a former Superfund site, and it's a location where Lennar Corporation is building 12,000 housing units overall. And as mayor, what do you plan to do about this scandal?
Well, you know, we were just talking about who hires who, and I said I would never trust the defense in their experts. The city needs to have their own person tell them exactly what these toxins are. I get that the Navy has a duty and obligation pursuant to their contract of sale. I get that. But having said that, when they come back with something that turns out to be fraudulent, the first thing you do is send them a bill for your guy, for your engineers to come in and tell us really and truly what's going on here. And the problem with that, as with so much more in politics, is a form of, you know, this pay-for-play stuff that's going on at City Hall. It's pretty amazing.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, you're going to get something if you pay for it. And there have been big players in that for many years in San Francisco now. And my candidacy basically stops that, which is why I'm so opposed. But, you know, you're going to get a toxic report that's either legitimate for the city or legitimate for the builders in the city that want it built, as opposed to the Navy, who still has an obligation to give you a clean bill of health and had to fraudulently give us a report because they were obligated to give us a report.
When you talk about pay for play, I mean, you're a lawyer, of course, and so an allegation like that is pretty severe, but you also have been involved with city politics for a very, very long time. What would you do about that? Because a lot of people think about corruption in City Hall, but there's not a lot of names named necessarily.
Oh, there actually has been in history. What I would do about it, I would stop it.
How?
Let me give you an example. I wrote the first smoking ban, okay, in the United States of America, and I banned smoking in the workplace. And when I did that, I had all sorts of fights because Willie Brown on the state level had given immunity to the tobacco industry, immunity to an industry that swore it was not addictive, and yet they knew very well it was addictive and killing people. And on a napkin at a restaurant, while everybody's enjoying lunch, they sign a document that the state of California can't sue the tobacco industry. Unconscionable, absolutely unconscionable. You know, Willie's famous for that kind of stuff. I had to fight them, and we won. You know what you do? You call people on the carpet. You embarrass them. You shame them. I'm doing that right now with an ordinance concerning the sanctuary law that I wrote. You know, you call them on the carpet going, what are you doing? The citizens of San Francisco don't want this. Why are you doing it? You shame them.
Would you want to shake up City Hall in ways? So do you see corruption kind of infiltrating at different levels because of, say, I mean, you mentioned Willie Brown. I think that there's a lot of Willie Brown's legacy that's within City Hall.
Yeah.
How would you go about addressing that?
Well, on the whole mayor's race, during the whole campaign, I have said I would let go three or four of the very big department heads. The head of MTA and the department of DPW and Park and Rec need to get their resumes ready. I believe what they've done, they're like kings of kingdoms. People don't even know what they're doing, and they're absolutely running the city into the ground. I mean, you know, I've discovered sole source contracts based on, contracts based on a sole source exemption to redo a street 10 times because the money is still in the contract with a subcontractor that is totally corrupt. And that money can be so used in better places. Moreover, a sole source contract, let's say you want a painting. When you give a sole source contract without a competitive bid such that the efficiency is higher, the lack of efficiency is higher and the price is lower, you're going to end up, you have to have a Picasso. In other words, this person has to be a sole source exemption. If you want a painting, it's got to be Picasso or Leonardo himself, okay? It isn't some company that digs a hole in the ground and paves the street. There are a lot of companies, nobody doing contracts in our city should have a sole source exemption when it comes to MTA or DPW, period, period.
Having stated that, with some of the powers that be in city politics,
mm-hmm.
do you think that affects your chances to become mayor?
I think the people of San Francisco absolutely love it. They absolutely, because who has the guts to say DPW's got to find a new job? I'm in this because I love San Francisco. I'm not in this to make people have a better salary at the top of, at the highest levels. Do you know that the head of DPW makes over $405,000 a year?
I see a lot of salaries in city government that are extraordinarily high.
It's boggling. Too bad you can't see my Italian expressions here.
I know. I should have mentioned that. No, it was good. It would be good if this were video.
Yeah. It's like, whoa.
Well, I appreciate that. That's Angela Alioto. She's a candidate for mayor of San Francisco. I wanted to touch just briefly, too, along health lines on Healthy San Francisco, which is paid for by city government. It's about $50 million in a recent fiscal year. And this covers some health care for individuals making up to $54,000 a year, and undocumented residents are also eligible. What do you think about this program?
I think it's really important. Really important. Any kind of health care, I think, is really important. I think, I believe Gavin Newsom started that, and I think he did a really good job with it. I get that they're undocumented, but they're children and their families, and we need to be there to make sure that everybody's healthy. You know, a healthy child's a healthy city.
We've talked a little bit about then undocumented immigration and then sanctuary cities. So as you mentioned, you authored the City and County of Refuge Law, which is also known as the Sanctuary City Law. And now you're talking about leading a proposed ballot measure we'd vote on in November that would require cooperation between local and federal agents when an undocumented immigrant has a felony on his or their record. What's changed for you, if anything?
I wrote the law in 91. Because we were trying to protect and save families from being ununited. There was a famous Club Elegante event where three to 400 people were just dancing the night away, and out of nowhere, the SFPD called at the time the INS. They came in, they arrested them, and then they deported them the next day. As a supervisor, we were left with a whole district of our city with children sitting on the front steps not knowing where their parents were. It was a crisis. I had hearings on it for over 6 months, and the sanctuary law that I wrote protects the families from the San Francisco police calling the INS to deport undocumented people. Okay? That was 91. I went back in 94 to amend it because it was being used for felons, and I took felons out of it. So no felon.
So you mean people who have a felony on their record as well? Right.
In the United States.
Okay.
No felon should be protected by the sanctuary law. That's not the point of the law by any means. David Campos went back in 2016, amended the law, and added dangerous felonies. You can have up to 3 dangerous felonies before you're reported to INS, or ICE. The interesting thing about that is not even American citizens have that. Right. They get reported immediately to all federal agencies to see if there are rapes or murders or mayhem in any other state to see if this is not just this person. But having said that, the law was never intended to cover serious, dangerous felons. And I can't tell you how many Latino families have called me because, by the way, not all immigrants are Latino. We have immigrants from all over the world in San Francisco, and the sanctuary law is applicable to all of them. But we've had so many women call me in the last couple of days to thank me, which has been very interesting and pretty sad that this has been going on without us even knowing it. A third grader went to her teacher and said that her mother's boyfriend was molesting her. And the teacher had no help at all from SFPD because they didn't want to have anything to do with undocumented people doing felonious acts. And so this little girl had nowhere to go. Now she does. Or she will in November.
If it gets on the ballot.
Oh, it gets. I'm going to get the signatures. I know all of the politicians in San Francisco were standing on the front stairs of City Hall yesterday. It was one of the most absurd sights I've ever seen. Absurd. If they think they're going to bully me, they've got to be kidding.
Well, this is what I wanted to touch upon, because there was a big backlash amongst other candidates and other elected officials. And obviously, the whole sanctuary city or state debate has become a huge political lightning rod, you know, between, say, maybe polarized liberals and conservatives to some extent. I can hear the nuance that you're talking about, but what do you think about this evolution of this law that you wrote?
Let me just say that the state law, the state sanctuary law, excludes 800 dangerous felonies. Okay? So it's just San Francisco that went back in and added felonies. And added felons. So what do I think about it? I think that the elected officials have totally lost touch with the citizens of San Francisco. And I'm not saying just a few. I mean, everywhere I go, people are thanking me, no matter what community it is. And then you've got this outrage from these elected officials. Quite frankly, I have no idea what they said on the steps yesterday. I've listened to it twice. I cannot figure out what they're saying. They can't be saying we are a sanctuary city because I wrote it and I'm saying that. So they're not up there against me saying we are a sanctuary city. I wrote it. They have called me a Nazi and a fascist. It's like I wrote the law. I wrote medicinal marijuana. I wrote, you know, I have been called, you know, a far left lefty. I've been called everything in my life, but it's never gone past being left. Now I'm a fascist and a Nazi. It's absurd. You know, we are in this horrible crisis with people dying on our streets because the elected officials don't know what the people of San Francisco want.
We're speaking with Angela Alioto. She's a candidate for mayor of San Francisco. Let's turn to housing and homelessness.
Yes.
What do you think would be the best way to address San Francisco's housing affordability crisis?
Housing affordability is one of the biggest complicated issues in San Francisco. What happened was, and it touches on homelessness, because some of the buildings I had in my plan that were being affected for chronically homeless people were taken out of the plan to house the new employees coming to town.
Tell me more about this plan.
2012. Too. Well, okay. The 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness I did in 2004 with Gavin Newsom to 2012. We housed over 4,600 chronically homeless people, which range from people who live on the streets from 4 to 6 years. I mean, embedded chronic homelessness, really tough to get off the street. We housed 4,600 of them in units that we got master leases on and or owned the building already. And in 2012, when the tech companies started coming to town with all the employees, the city hall moved the funding and the buildings out of the chronic homeless plan and put it into affordable housing for the new employees.
And so,
by the way, not just for the new employees. By no means is this a tech industry. I'm not blaming tech industry at all. I'm blaming the fact that nobody had a plan, and homelessness, as usual, was put on the back burner. And now we have a massive crisis because of that.
Well, so building off of that, then, I mean, this kind of, like, as you said, it ties together affordable housing and homelessness. Sticking on affordable housing, what would you do to deal with that crisis at this point?
Well, we have to have more. We have to build more. We have to build more density. But we don't have to ruin our city the way Scott Wiener wanted to do. That Bill 825 and 27, that was horrible for San Francisco. First of all, the city never gives up any rights, especially our zoning rights. That's ridiculous. Second of all, the density would have been anywhere from 8 to 10 stories high on any quote-unquote transit hub. Then a transit hub was declared to be any street that has a bus line. I mean, come on. You know, we're an iconic city for a reason. We need to keep it iconic, even though right now we are nationally being called a slum. And to some degree, that's what we've become. We need more housing, more density. I've agreed to the 5,000 units that the mayor agreed to. I've talked to, as you just referred to, Lennar, and it's called, there's another two or three companies that are building units that are not on toxic land. And I mean, something like 18,000 units. I agree to all of that, and we do need it. But I also think that there'll be a recession. So, you know, be careful what you ask for, because you don't want a glut of empty apartments in the city either.
Would you anticipate that? I mean, I could see if there's a recession, prices going down maybe, but with the demand for housing, do you think it would really go down?
Well, if all the employees left, yes. Yeah. I mean, there are certain companies that are never going anywhere, right? I mean, Salesforce is here.
Well, so as we see right now, but of course, companies
no,
someday.
But he's a San Franciscan, though. Mm. You know, his Mark Benioff's grandfather on his mother's side was a very famous trial lawyer, Martin Levine.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And he was a supervisor in the city and county of San Francisco in the late 50s. Very, very famous trial lawyer who created the cause of action for emotional distress, which is in all of my cases. Mm-hmm. So he's not going anywhere. Marvin Levine.
His company might, though. I mean, as
his
far
company
as the size
might,
of it,
but I think
pretty,
he's a very loyal guy.
It's getting a lot of real estate in San Francisco and a lot of very prominent real estate.
Right, right. I was just there yesterday. They had a wonderful interview of the mayoral candidates one by one. I loved it. It was a great setting. I really enjoyed speaking to all those kids and having them understand the dilemma we're in.
What kind of things do you tell children about running for mayor?
Do I tell children? You know, I don't know that. For example, I have an 18-year-old granddaughter who's just graduating, and she called me this morning, and she's really upset with the names I'm being called. And she is the president of the Youth Commission I created 20 years ago. She's extremely involved in politics, and you know, she's...
So you're like, get a thick skin.
Yeah, it's not just get a thick skin. It's very tough. And I applaud all the candidates in that area to run for mayor of San Francisco, run for mayor of any large city. It's very tough. I'm used to it, but, you know, it's I'm not quite used to all those elected officials standing in front of City Hall yesterday. That was quite a scene. It's kind of a Alfred Hitchcock scene. You know what I mean? What are they doing? How about calling me and discussing it? Nobody talks to anybody anymore. There are no coalitions. Everybody hates each other. It's stunning. How about calling me? How about let's sit down and discuss this? No, that didn't happen.
What do you think? So.
And by the way, I'd been discussing it for months.
Yeah. It just came to the media's attention recently, I think. And so then
well,
it
because
becomes
I did
to everybody's
the ordinance.
Attention. Yes, right. Yeah, it's interesting then because it being as difficult as it is, and if you're going to bring up controversial ideas or ones that are not, say, conventionally acceptable, whether or not they are, then you are making yourself susceptible to outrage and name-calling and current politics. Why do you want to get back into this? It's 20 years after you last held public office.
Because I ran for office 2 years ago and won on the DCCC. I came in number one out of 48 candidates. So I've been out there because I did the homeless plan for 10 years, which was incredibly successful.
But you last left the Board of Supervisors.
I left the Board of Supervisors in 97, right. Mm-hmm. So... And, you know, then when I was part of building Pac Bell Park, believe me, I had people hitting me with their canes or hitting me with anything they could. When I did the smoking ban, I had people jump over the chambers, the bar in the chambers, attacking me. So from that standpoint, I'm used to it. I'm not used to elected officials attacking with such outrageous name-calling. That's so uncivilized. And as bad as we were as a Board of Supervisors in the city in the 90s, nobody would ever have done that. So why am I back in it? Again, I'm a civil rights trial lawyer, mother of four, grandmother of five, third generation San Franciscan, and I cannot stand the poverty on our streets, the dirty streets, the injection, you know, people injecting on our streets. I can't stand the city being ruined and being so at war.
What would your plan look like to handle the people who are living without homes in San Francisco right now? Like the ones who are immediately living without homes.
You mean homeless?
Yes.
The answer is very simple. The work to do is very hard. Permanent supportive housing. Permanent supportive housing. Each one of those three words has a 5 to 6 layer analysis that goes with it. Permanent doesn't mean a navigation center. Permanent doesn't mean a shelter. Permanent doesn't mean a rehab center or a mental health program or where you're in for 6 months and then they put you back into the atmosphere you came from. That's not permanent. If you're going to take a mentally ill person off the street and put them into a program for 6 months and they get well enough to go into a unit, you have to have that unit. Or we, the city, are not going to pay you the program, $6 million a year, to take people in. You have to have a plan that is a continuum of care, whether it's a continuum of care into a permanent unit, or it's supportive, meaning with medical, or into a hospitalization issue, or some kind of in or out of a hospital situation, depending upon how severe the mental distress is. And believe me, mental illness is something that's been so disregarded as real for so long. I created the Mental Health Advisory Board in the 90s. Then it was, get over it. You're not sick. But now I think we realize that these people are really, some of them are really, really sick. They shouldn't be conserved like Supervisor Weiner and Lyndon Bree want to do. They should, because being a conservator of a person means you have full control of their whole life, and to get out of it, you've got to go to a judge. And I wouldn't want to do that to anyone that was just, like not doing well 3 or 4 hours of the day. So many of our homeless people were born with these issues and had parents that said, forget it, I can't handle this. And so they're on the street. We have places that will take them and take good care of them and understand their illness.
Well, considering it'll take a while to get to permanent supportive housing, but there are a lot of people who are living on the streets right now who don't have enough shelter beds to go to or don't want to go to shelter beds and don't have supportive housing to go to, what would you do with all of these people who, as you said, have a lot of issues that they're dealing with?
I would take the tents off the street, starting one by one. There are only about 150 of them. I would start with each tent get them into some type of housing, depending upon what the particular problem was. I mean, if you're triple diagnosed and you've been on the street for 6 years and you need medical care, then that's the kind of program we would put you into. We did this from 2004 to 2012. We did this, and we housed 4,600 people plus, with a lack of recidivism of 94%, an unbelievably successful program that just literally got, dropped in 2012. It's such a shame.
Well, stop me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that over a long period of time, the numbers in the homeless count has remained somewhat unchanged. Is that post this program?
Yes. Our program started in 2004 when you were stepping over people in the street. In 2012, you were not stepping over people in the street. And if you look at the chart that's on the city and county website, you just put in 10-year plan or Alioto, and the chart will come up. It's a 2014 report of what happened with the 10-year plan, of the results of the 10-year plan. It's shocking. I mean, Gavin Newsom just the other day, I sent him the chart. I said, you have a lot to be proud of here. And he wrote back and said, these statistics are incredible. And I don't believe any of them were made up. And they're right there to see. And you can see the erosion of that from 2012 to today. We never had tents before 2015.
Well, they were introduced, it seems. There was some sort of a campaign of sorts to provide tents as well.
But we never had
not
tents.
Not from officials, but...
Right. But we never had tents. And I think that was a consequence of Occupy. Hmm. When the concept of the tents came out. And I get that some of the,
people are trying to be compassionate.
These are not easy issues. These are very hard issues. I've been dealing with homelessness since I first ran for office in the 80s. Homelessness and HIV. We're in the middle of the crisis, and we did some incredible work. But what's happened, the explosion now, is just unacceptable. I just received a text from Jeff, who's the head of the homeless.
Kaczynski.
He's incredible. Okay, I am so excited about him, because he not only really gets it, but he also understands the compassionate side of it. And his statistics that I just saw about why people are on the street, you know, people want to say evictions, 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 but it's really more about losing your job because of your illness. And then not being able to pay the rent, which is not an eviction. It's you can't pay the rent. Our homeless plan had a subsidy. We paid rents for 1 to 2 months that got people back up on their feet so they could stay in their apartment. There is no prevention prong to anything that we're doing today like there was in the 10-year plan.
What would you do about the mental illness aspect then, though? Because that wouldn't go away.
No, that goes right into programs and then into the needed medical care. That's what the supportive part of the plan is.
Mm-hmm. That sounds expensive.
We had not as expensive as what they're spending today. We had minute clinics every 7 blocks. So the building, like the YMCA building, was a fantastic example of what we did. The first floor is a minute clinic with pro bono doctors from UCSF. So anyone within living in any of the units for 7 blocks from the YMCA on Golden Gate would have a medical place to go 24 hours a day. I ran for mayor in 1991 against Art Agnos because he closed the Mount Zion Crisis Clinic. And I begged him. I said, please, it's $140,000, takes care of 6,000 people a year. It's a 24-hour pro bono doctors from UCSF.
That sounds like a real bargain.
Please don't close it. I begged him. And this is a guy I supported with my heart and soul when he ran in the late 80s. And he closed it. And I said, if you close it, I'm going to have to run for mayor because it's going to be a nightmare. And it was. They were all put out on the street. And so tested as of today, we do not have a 24-hour, 7 days a week crisis clinic.
I'm wondering, how do you think the city would be different if you had been elected mayor one of these other times you've run?
I think that, the programs would have been set in stone and you just follow it. You know what I'm saying? Here's what you do from 1 to 10. Don't veer off course. Just follow it. For example, I've always advocated, and when I was mayor, I advocated zero-based budgeting for our budget. We have, with the exception of those funds that are allocated, I allocated funds apart. I bifurcated them from the budget so that it would go to children. And to today, it goes to the children of San Francisco for before school and after school programs and feeding. Now we've got homeless children in our school system. That is something we didn't have when I was.
So you would lock in money for certain programs.
It's already locked in.
In those cases.
In those cases.
But in
right?
more cases, if you were mayor.
And no, what I would do is there's a homeless amount of money in police, homeless amount of money budget in fire, homeless amount of money in emergency services. I would take all the homeless things out of those services. It's not a police activity unless somebody is doing bodily injury to someone or is a 5150, which is injury to themselves or another, okay? It's not a police issue. It's not a firefighting issue. If you call someone, there's the famous example of the woman with the headache at Second and Market. She calls the fire department like 5 or 6 times a month, and you know, you get 3 or 4 rigs that show up, you get emergency. It's absurd.
That's a lot of money.
It's absurd. It's not the way it should be handled. All of those funds need to be put into the homeless department that Mayor Lee created. That's one thing he did that's very exciting. He made homelessness a department and hired a great guy to do it, but didn't give him the tools to do it.
We're speaking with Angela Alioto. She's a candidate for mayor of San Francisco. I want to go through some of these other elements of economy and transportation relatively quickly just to honor your time. A study by Intuit, which makes the program TurboTax, found about 34% of Americans are independent contractors. That means, among other things, they don't receive benefits, and the number is trending upward. What do you think about this kind of employment?
What do I think about employing independent contractors?
The fact that the number of independent contractors in the United States, and certainly we can see that here in the Bay Area, is growing and growing rapidly.
Okay, but the city government, I have always objected to the city government hiring independent contractors. I'm laughing because I had a hearing once, I'll never forget it. I could not understand why the city attorney's office with 137 attorneys was hiring out private law firms. It drove me nuts. I couldn't figure out why they were doing it. All of these contracts that are doing our streets, again, those are all private independent contractors with the city. So I, as far as the city goes, we've got 35,000 employees. Willie Brown literally hired 14,000 people. We do not need to independently contract with anything, again, unless you're looking for a Picasso. But having said that, independent contractors, as a civil rights lawyer, we have fought very hard for civil rights for independent contractors in the state of California. Most states don't have civil rights for independent contractors. But I, you know, that it's growing is really not an issue for the city.
But the city can do things with companies that are hiring a lot of independent contractors, potentially. Or I wonder if you could, because there's companies like Uber and Lyft, which are hiring a lot of independent contractors, and there have been controversies around whether they're actually, whether they should be recognized as employees and paid that way.
Right.
Would you do anything to regulate ride-hailing companies?
Well, let me just say, they've come to town with 60 to 70,000 cars a day. The congestion is outrageous. Nobody had a plan for the infrastructures. The streets can't take it. The sidewalks can't take it. And they're not regulated, okay? What they did is they went from their internet company over government to your telephone. We're not getting taxes from them. They're doing business in the city and county. They need to be taxed, and they need to be regulated. There should be a white zone every two blocks where your Uber turns it. You meet your Uber at the white zone. You don't meet your Uber in the middle of the street where the Uber double parks, okay? And Uber's got to regulate its employees somehow. I was in an Uber the other day where the gentleman driving the car lives in Bakersfield, okay? Oof. So he's been sleeping in the car at night. And the question is, you know, what's the safety issue? They've got to regulate it more. And as I understand it, they totally don't pay those people, the drivers, decent wages.
So would you want to bring Uber and Lyft and these companies to the mayor's office to talk with them about these issues?
All of them. I want to bring all of tech in, not just, you know, all of them. Mm-hmm. Look what they just did with the scooters. You know, you wake up one morning, I can't believe this, and there are 200 plus scooters on all over the city, right? Every elderly person is scared to death of them. Every family is scared to death of them. Then they're littering all over the city where they just drop them in bunches. If I'd been the mayor of San Francisco, I'd have had every single one of them collected. I would have had the owners of those companies come in. And before they leave that room, they're going to have some kind of plan with the city and county of San Francisco, where not only the city benefits by getting people out of their cars, but also benefits in a way that is good for the citizens of San Francisco, not good for some company that was so arrogant that they just skipped right over government and went to your telephone.
I think a lot of companies do that.
I know.
Not just scooter companies.
I know.
What public transportation projects would you support in San Francisco?
Right now, they're working on this BRT on Geary Boulevard.
The bus rapid transit, the central lane.
Right. Again, so amazing to me that there's no coalition building, there's no talking, there's no... I've heard from so many elderly people on this issue because they're going to take away 27 bus stops. So what you do is you sit down with MTA. MTA is another one of the departments I would do something about with the department head, the director. You sit down with them and go, look, I get your rapid transit. I get you want to do that. I get you want to get employees from the south of Market out to the ocean, 48th and, you know, Geary. I get that. And you want to get them there rapidly. But can't you do a half and half? Can't you have half rapid on your red, you know, freeway? And the other one stops at every stop that is existing now so that the elderly and families have a bus stop.
You'd probably need an extra lane because...
They have the extra lane.
So you would keep the rapid one in the center and then have the slower one go on the side.
Right, where it is now.
Mm-hmm. Because it picks up more people for that purpose.
You can't have elderly walking four blocks to get to a bus stop.
No, that's definitely a major concern.
But see, nobody sat down and said, let's compromise here. Let's work this out.
I think that they probably did, actually. I mean, there have been muni plans where they have looked over the city and seen what gets the most use. And
we know what gets the most use. The point is, did they sit down with the community and compromise? I just was at a pet shop on Saturday morning at a press conference out on 32nd and Terravel. Out of nowhere, after all those small businesses are dying in San Francisco. They're dying. Does anybody care? Is anybody going to help them?
Was that the animal connection?
Judah? No. It's on Terrible.
Okay.
It's an emergency hospital, pet hospital.
Oh, a hospital.
Yeah. And it's they got over 10,000 signatures for them not to do a red zone because they're doing those ramps in the middle for the Terrible, the Judah lot.
Yeah, the El Terrible. Mm-hmm.
Right. So they wake up last Wednesday and the entire block is painted red. You know, the businesses are going out of business anyway. It's just horrible. The lack of respect for our small businesses is simply horrible. I told them if I were there, I'd go back out there and paint it white. You know?
They probably appreciated that.
Yeah, they did. I felt so sorry for them. It's like everything's going out of business. These vacancies are making boarded up stores. They're ghettoizing the block. There's the 500 block of North Beach. It's stunning.
The Terrible is actually doing pretty well. I mean, Terrible has a lot of thriving businesses right now. Maybe not so much the pet hospital. I don't know. And it could cause a problem if they don't have parking, for example. But there's a lot of businesses thriving there.
No. If you go from 20th to 48th, they're not thriving so well. There are a lot of vacancies. Check it out.
I live out there.
Well, check it out. Drive from 20th to past 38th. You'll see a lot of vacancies, a lot of building, too.
Okay. Well, we'll disagree on that one.
Yeah, that's fine.
We're speaking with Angela Alioto. She's a candidate for mayor of San Francisco. So I have a lightning round now. This is to kind of wrap up the conversation.
Okay.
So these are very quick answers. It could either be one word or just a few words or, you know, a quick thought, relatively quick thought. What do you think about the use of tasers in policing?
I think police officers should have the alternative of a taser.
Legalized adult use recreational marijuana, is that good or bad?
I think it can be good in some places and bad in others. For example, the Chinese community doesn't want it. And if that community doesn't want it anywhere near them, I think they should have that choice.
Charter schools versus conventional schools in the public school system.
Conventional.
Why?
Because if someone would care about our conventional district schools, they would be wonderful. You know, if someone would give them the tools they need and the money they need to get the job done and the teachers they need, they'd be wonderful. I mean, there are wonderful public schools throughout the state. San Francisco's are suffering horribly.
The Golden State Warriors coming to San Francisco.
Love it. I'm a fan. I did the legislation that built the Giants. We were going to lose them to Pittsburgh, to St. Petersburg in Florida. And I'm a fan. And people should remember that the Warriors were San Francisco Warriors before they became Golden State.
That's true. They played right over the hill
they
here
sure
at the
did.
Cal Palace.
They sure did.
Being the daughter of a mayor.
Yep.
What
the greatest mayor the city ever had.
Yeah, so I've heard. How do you feel about that? Like, how does that affect your life?
You're a little late in asking me that. I was 13 or 14 when he got elected.
That's an interesting thing
I hated politics. Ah. I hated it. It took Dad away. He wasn't to dinner at night, and we had everybody from the SLA to Sing Q to the Patty Hearst Nightmare to Zebra, Zodiac, San Quentin 7, and then, of course, they blew up our house twice, the Candy Bombers. So I have a good relationship with police officers. They were living in the living room. The tax squad lived in the living room.
And yet it didn't sour you on the idea of being mayor.
I was soured on the idea of going into politics for all of my 20s and half of my 30s. Oh, absolutely, it did. I didn't go right into politics. I went to law school. Thank God.
What do you think about the Central Subway?
I think it's just a shame. It needs to go all the way down to Fisherman's Wharf. I mean, what is that about? Stopping in Chinatown. I mean, really, what is that about?
What do you think of how Mid-Market Street changed during the Lee administration?
You know, Ed Lee was a really good friend of mine. And if you knew Ed Lee, you'd know that a lot that happened wasn't really in the heart and soul of Ed Lee. That's just my personal opinion. When I left City Hall and went into civil rights, he was a mentor of mine. Ed was a very quiet guy and brilliant in civil rights. A very happy guy. I think that he got thrown into a role he did not want. You know, he got off the airplane and didn't know he was mayor. Willie Brown told this story at Ed's funeral. And that just goes to show who's in charge. And why Willie even thinks that story is okay is beyond me. But he told it at the funeral that Ed walked off the airplane and everyone was calling him Mr. Mayor and he didn't know what they were talking about.
Do you like how Mid-Market Street changed?
No, I think that it's look, there was a real recession. I get that. And we absolutely need to invigorate the city. I also get that. Again, nobody sat down and made out a plan. And the concept of giving billionaires a tax incentive is like, did you give that to the small businesses? Did you help small businesses in any way? Small businesses are absolutely inundated with several different taxes, okay? Why? It's just horrible. I'm really upset about what's happened to small businesses. So when the tech came to town, there wasn't a plan. So I think it could have been done in a little smoother way and not so all at once. But it is what it is, and we have time to stop anything that is, harming our city, which is what I'm doing.
What do you hate most about San Francisco?
The congestion. The traffic congestion's out of control.
What do you love most about San Francisco?
Oh, come on, it's iconic. It's my city. You know what I mean? It's San Francisco's iconic. You can travel around the world and not leave San Francisco. The different cultures, the different activities, the joie de vivre, the love of life, it's iconic. The panoramic views, every time I come home from wherever, because I live in Rome during the summer, whenever I come home, just seeing that, seeing the skyline, it's always very exciting to me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.